We shift gears now to another subject that's right in the wheelhouse for Coast to Coast, near-death experiences, NDEs. That phrase, by the way, that term was coined by the great Dr. Raymond Moody, a courageous scientist who had the cojones to go ahead and look into these strange reports, a sequence of events, a series of events that have been repeated by persons, at least reported by persons all over the world, persons who are hovering near death, who seemingly go outside of their body, are conscious that they're outside of their body, they're drawn through a tunnel, they experience beings of light. Some of them have very bad experiences, something almost hell-like, and then for one reason or another, they are reunited with their bodies and have shared these experiences with the people who are around them when they wake up. Is it real? Science would tell you that it's a chemical reaction inside the brain. It's the dying of the brain. It's cutting off oxygen. A whole lot of explanations that probably don't sufficiently explain the comparable nature of the experiences that have been reported all over the world and throughout human history. In a moment, we're going to be joined by Diane Corcoran, a registered nurse and PhD and retired Army colonel, who is president of the board of the International Association for Near-Death Studies. There are legitimate scientists and researchers who are pursuing this in an academic way in peer-reviewed journals, and we're going to find out what the latest research shows. Stick around. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. Diane Corcoran became interested in the near-death phenomena back in 1969. She was an Army field nurse in Vietnam and started seeing the carnage from the battlefield and hearing these injured soldiers tell her these amazingly consistent stories about what became known as a near-death experience. So she became interested in that. She eventually left the military, rose to the rank of colonel, left the military, pursued a doctorate at the University of Texas, Austin, and continued to study NDEs, particularly as experienced by soldiers and by children. And we're happy to welcome her back to the program. Diane, great to have you back.
Thanks. It's nice to be here.
Let's start with encapsulate the stories that you heard there in Vietnam. Do you remember the first one you heard and who told you?
I, of course, don't remember his name, but I remember that he had a significant injury. It might have been an amputation of his arm, I believe. And he was, at this point, in the recovery room and called me over. It was in the middle of the night and said, I want to tell you something, but you've got to promise to believe me. And then he started telling me about when he was hit, he felt himself come out of his physical body. He could see himself lying in the rice paddy. He said, I didn't know what had happened to me. And I could see other people around that had also been hit. And he talked about kind of going up into the heavens. And as soon as he was out of his physical body, he said he didn't have any pain and he was in this place of magnificent light and just the sense of being loved unconditionally. And so, and as we know, that those are all pretty common characteristics of NDEs now, but at that time, I had no idea what he was talking about, and I just reassured him because he was crying, he was so emotional. He said, you've just got to believe me, this was so real. And I told him, I said, I do believe this happened to you, and you should consider it a gift. It was a wonderful experience, and maybe you'll understand more about it later. And unfortunately, we didn't keep people's names and addresses at the time, but it did. That experience stuck with me, and I kept thinking about it when I got home, and I started teaching about it, and it wasn't until the mid-70s that we really knew anything about it when Raymond wrote his first book and coined the phrase near-death experience.
Did you hear more than one of those kind of stories while in Vietnam?
I heard a couple. Had I known enough at the time, I would have asked more questions because I worked in the pre-op and recovery. So they would come in from the field, go directly to surgery, then we would recover them overnight or for a few hours. So I didn't get a chance to talk to them a lot. But certainly I heard different parts of it. And then when I came home, I started asking people if they'd had some kind of a significant injury or illness. I started asking them about their experiences.
And you've developed sort of over the years, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but you've developed sort of a scale that sort of measures how many of the characteristics that each individual NDE meets, and thus you have sort of a rating system, right? Can you tell me how that works?
Well, yes, it's called the Grayson Scale. Bruce Grayson developed it, and he used it in his research to look at the number of after effects and characteristics, and then he would grade the depth of the NDE. In other words, some people might, there are about 15 common characteristics, and somebody might have one or two and then feel like they're jerked right back in their body, or some go on to have five or six or seven, and it might be much deeper. There isn't a time sense there, so we really can't measure it by that. So his work has been looking at that, and that's been out there for a long time now.
So I would guess then, as you're describing it, that medical personnel, healthcare workers, the people who are around when this experience happens to the injured person, they're a great resource for you as you're trying to make sense of this thing and put the whole story together.
One would like to hope that's true. However, very few healthcare workers, and even the clergy and social work, I've been amazed. I've been teaching this almost 40 years now, and it's been all over the television. You've had people on television forever talking about this, and yet I still run into psychologists, people who have no idea what an NDE is.
And is there hostility toward it or fear among medical professionals? They just don't want to deal with it?
No, I think it's there's hostility in that they've never been taught about it. I gave a lecture at Methodist Hospital in San Antonio a couple of years ago, and a psychologist from the Army Hospital in San Antonio came. And, you know, I did a pretty basic NDE 101 and gave all the characteristics. And when I got done, she said, "I am just furious that I have never been taught this in all the years or continuing education. This has never come up in my education, and how could I be expected to be helpful if I have no idea what it is?"
It's, so it seems to me,
it's not anybody that is belligerent about it. They simply don't know. I'm hoping we, you know, now that it's more of a common word, that the young medical students would get some touch of it. Nurses have a sense of it, but still, if they're not really told how to handle somebody and be able to help them and support them, they might be hesitant to do that.
I would imagine it is hard to even estimate how many real cases there are, or documentable or reasonably assumed cases there are, legitimate, because so many people would be afraid to tell anyone. They don't understand it. If they've never been exposed to the literature, they wouldn't know even how to express it, or worried that somebody would think they're crazy. And then if they do go ahead and tell it to the person who's bedside or taking care of them, they don't really know what the reaction might be. Those people would have no idea what to do with it.
Yeah, there people certainly are less hesitant now and talk about it more. but it certainly is something that people worry about, especially soldiers and people who have multiple issues. They have a lot to worry about. So an NDE on top of major physical injuries and emotional trauma really just sets them over the top. And I know of several cases where they have tried to report it to a doctor at the VA or in the military hospital, and they simply don't want to hear about it because, one, they don't know what to do about it and don't really know what it is. And in some very sad cases, they have just medicated them and said, oh, they must be bipolar or schizophrenic, so we'll just give them some medication and that'll help them. And of course, that's the worst thing in the world to do. They don't need medication.
Of course, you have a special interest in veterans who have these experiences because of your experience in Vietnam, your rank and long career in the military. But I saw on the organization, the website of your organization, that you're sort of the lead investigator for veteran-related stuff. I would imagine, you know, and we're now in a permanent state of war. We've always got casualties all the time. There's no such thing as peace anymore, that you've got a lot of cases.
Well, there's a lot of cases out there. I mean, we know that we had nearly a million injured people just from Iraq and Afghanistan. And as you said, there are injuries all the time. And without a service and knowledge of providers at the VA and in military hospitals as these folks come home, they just simply don't get taken care of and they don't get addressed. And for me, that's very frustrating. While I was on active duty, I taught about that near-death experience all those years in many different conferences and environments. And I would have lots of different people call me and want to be able to tell about their experience, even some generals that, you know, couldn't tell it to anybody else, but they'd call and tell me. And it saddens me that we don't have enough people that are trained in this. They have enough things going on with them that they don't have to feel isolated and have a real gap in care because nobody knows about it. And we have the answers. Our organization has put together a training plan. We are trying to make a video right now. We have a trailer and we're trying to fund a veteran video to be part of this training program. And we would go out and train the trainers so that people are available, because it doesn't take a lot. It takes listening and having knowledge about the experience. It's not going to, most of them don't need extensive therapy for the NDE. They may need therapy for PTSD or other things, but they're certainly not the same.
You know, I've read about the range of reactions, and it's, you know, and how people deal with it. And it's a pretty broad range. Some who describe it as sort of mystical and magical, and it's the greatest thing in their life, and it changes their life and gives them new purpose. And others, I would imagine, who can't deal with it. Can you describe that range?
Well, certainly, I think the largest majority of people are mystified initially, and they're not sure exactly what to think about it. And so it takes a while to get information, to understand what happened, and to understand the after effects and things so they can understand they're not going crazy. This is a normal experience that many, many people have had. Now, there are people who I think it takes longer and they're just really upset with it. And it can be very upsetting if you have all these other problems and nobody will listen to you. Last year, I met a gentleman at my Vietnam reunion meeting, and we were sitting and talking because he was injured and brought to the hospital where I was stationed. And he had essentially had the back of his head blown off and had a huge vascular and head injury. And he's telling me about his experience and the things that happened to him when he came into the hospital. And the more he talked about it, I said, Michael, I think you had a near-death experience. It sounds like you've got many elements in here. He said, well, I tried to tell the doctors about these things that happened to me, and they just didn't want to hear it. He was in a special study for head cases, and he tried to tell them, and they just said, no, we don't want to know about that. And so he really had never told anybody about it until we were sitting at the table. Here's 40 years later, and he's just getting an opportunity to tell it for the first time.
You know, some of the descriptions you read about it, it was more real than life itself. And I guess one characteristics that has been reported is that the people, while they're outside their body, if we accept that's what's happening to them for the sake of conversation, they're outside their body, they encountered dead loved ones and some other kind of presence, and they're reluctant to leave.
Yes.
Why do they come back?
Well, it isn't their choice sometimes, and sometimes you'll hear people say, I wanted to come back. I had all these small children. I knew I should come back. And then other people said that the love was so intense and the unconditional support, they just never wanted to come back. And the next thing they knew, they were back in their physical body. So a lot of people end up back here that didn't want to come back. And as a nurse, all of a sudden it made sense to me why people would be upset with us when we would resuscitate them. And clearly they were in this pain-free, loving state, and all of a sudden they're back in this painful body that they don't feel like they fit quite right in. And so now it makes perfect sense.
Do they get told? Is there a message? Hey, look, it's not your time, or you've got unfinished business, or do they figure it out on their own?
Say, you know, this isn't your time. You're not ready yet. You can't come here yet. Something, and are sent back. And many of them object to that. But the next thing they know, they're back in their physical body.
And you know, as a scientist, do you think that the experiences as described, that these people really do leave their bodies, that their consciousness or whatever?
Yes, I do. I mean, we've got so many hundreds and thousands of people that have discussed this from around the world now, and there's a great deal of study going on in the consciousness, a lot because of NDEs, because in many occasions, people are having near-death experiences when they actually have been declared dead. And so that means that this experience is not tied to an active brain. And that puts a whole different thing out there for people to look at. And there's a lot of work now with people studying consciousness and what all this means and different attributes that happen when this happens. I clearly believe them. There's just too much out there. And especially from hearing from children, they don't have any frame of reference. They, you know, they're just going to tell you what happened. And, you know, they'll say, I died. I went to this place, or I went to heaven. I saw my grandfather, or I saw, and sometimes they will talk about relatives that they have never met or seen, nor have their parents ever met or seen.
I want to get into that when we come back. We're talking with Diane Corcoran about near-death experiences. I'll tell you a little bit about her organization and how you can check it out right after this on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking with Diane Corcoran about near-death experiences, the scientific investigation of what witnesses have reported throughout human history. In particular, she specializes in military veterans, people, soldiers and sailors and others who've been wounded on the battlefield, as well as children who report these amazing experiences. They tell the story in forthright ways, including encounters on the other side with relatives they've never met in real life. We pick up that story in a moment. I just want to pass along a note from Robert Hastings. He has a code word. The code for the half-price video of his film is C2C. So the code is C2C for those of you who've written in to ask about that. And we're posting that on the Coast to Coast Facebook page in case you didn't get to write it down. Back in a moment with Diane Corcoran and more about NDEs. Stay with us. Diane Corcoran, before the break, you had a line there that sort of gave me a little goosebump, telling us about children who have the near-death experience and they encounter relatives on the other side and come back and tell about it. But it turns out these relatives are people they've never met or their parents have never met. Can you elaborate on that? You got an example that comes to mind?
Yes. One was with a little boy who had been very, very ill, and when he came back, he said that he had died and he went to heaven and he met his great-grandfather, and the great-grandfather lived in England and he had died in a fire, and he gave all these details about these great-grandparents that he had never met. And as it was, when he came back, he told his parents, who also had never met them, didn't know where they lived, and didn't know much about their lives. So they were curious, and they investigated it, and everything he said was true. And so that kind of, you know, you can't dream that, you can't hallucinate that, that's just information that you got in some other space that turns out to be absolutely real.
How often does that happen, where you get sort of a form of independent confirmation, information that comes to a person who has this experience that they should not or could not obtain in some other way?
Well, it happens pretty frequently, actually. And, unfortunately, we don't have the kind of research we'd like to have that really accumulates all of these things. We have experiences from different parts of the world and people telling about this, but we don't have as much as we'd like to have, and in the same way, I would love to see a study that really would give us good information on how often this happens to soldiers. And I know it happens frequently because they have really serious injuries, and but we just don't have that data, and unfortunately the VA or the military is not that interested in getting it. And I would love to be able to try to do something with that, because I think it's a serious issue that could give a great deal of relief to people. They have enough problems already. They don't need to feel isolated and afraid because they don't understand some experience they had. And it has pretty significant after effects, and they're already having physical and emotional after effects, some of these young people.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. The long-term effects, I'd read this somewhere. It might have been in the article in The Atlantic. A really great article came out late last year in The Atlantic. Very balanced story, and there was a line in there that talked about long-term effects being just as important as the near-death experience itself.
Oh,
tell me,
yes,
what that means.
It's very true, because the after effects are lifelong. These are not effects that, you know, happen for a week or two. These are changed people in many, many ways. They're much less materialistic. Many, many of them will change professions, will go to more altruistic professions. My friend that was a helicopter pilot from Vietnam, he became a chaplain, and we hear many stories like that. They are very caring. They have sensitivity to medication frequently. You know, they will have sensations, and some have some healing ability and psychic ability, which can be frightening. You know, if this would happen to you and you don't understand anything about it. And there's a lot of things like they don't like loud noises, they don't like bright lights, and a thirst for knowledge. They all of a sudden know things that they never knew before. We have a physician in upstate New York who got struck by lightning, and after he was struck, he could play and write classical music. He'd never played the piano before. And you have some really outstanding things like that that change your life forever. And many of these people then go on a quest for, you know, the meaning of life to them and helping others find their meaning as well. And it's pretty remarkable. And
is it overwhelmingly positive? Because I know there are at least some that are negative, but is it?
There are some that are negative, and people feel more lonely and isolated, but the majority of them you hear about are positive things. And, you know, but imagine a young child who has this experience. They're sick, their appendix ruptured. You know, they nearly drowned, and they come back and they try to tell their parents, I went to heaven and I saw, you know, somebody, I saw a spirit, and, you know, they try to explain this experience. And the parents' typical response might be, now don't make things up, or that was just a dream, and don't worry about it. And these kids will never talk about it again, usually until they're adults. And so they will suffer because they're going to be different kids. I think teachers ought to know so they could pick it up. They're going to be more mature. They're not necessarily going to like to play with kids their own age. They'll be smarter in many ways and sometimes have really enhanced vocabularies. And they're just going to be different and very sensitive, and it makes them kind of a target in some ways. An example of that is I actually have a nephew who is a near-death experiencer, and I recognized it when he was about 18 months old. But when he was about four, my brother has several children, and he was buying pizza for all these kids. And he didn't have enough cash with him to pay the pizza guy. So this nephew says, well, I've got money in my piggy bank, and you can have it to pay the pizza guy. And so he did that. And then, you know, everybody's eating and laughing and doing this. And there's my nephew sitting over in the corner looking very sad. My brother said to him, what's the matter? Why are you sad? And he said, I just don't understand why these kids don't appreciate what I did. And, you know, you go, what? He's a four-year-old, but their logic and maturity and things that they say is incredible sometimes.
You know, in light of the positive outcomes for so many people, the remarkable changes, and most of it being for the good, what occurs to me is, can it be induced? Can it be simulated in some way? It could be a heck of an industry if you could do something without actually causing people to die, where you can induce these kinds of changes in another way.
Yeah, unfortunately, I've had a couple people as president of the IANS, the International Association of Near-Death Studies. I sometimes get letters or invitations like that from people who are going to try to induce somehow an NDE, and of course, we don't want anything to do with that. But even if we would allow people to come out and have enough support so they could be themselves and they could illuminate the attributes that they are getting that have to do with love and caring and altruism, The world could be a very different place, I think, in some ways. We know there are millions and millions of experiencers, but there aren't millions and millions that are free to talk about it, that really understand it, and that have the kind of support they need to really get the most benefit from their own experience.
It seems like the legitimacy of the study of NDEs got a shot in the arm when this physician, Eben Alexander, his story went all over the place. He got trashed as a result, I think, of people that didn't want it to be true. But I think he stuck to his guns. Can you share with us your take on that story, that development?
Yes. Eben certainly has been all over the world now with his book and his experience. And I think it's certainly a legitimate experience because of the aspects of it, with his sister who was adopted being in it, and he didn't even know that she existed. And there's certainly things in there. And from the perspective of, he's a scientist, and he himself didn't believe in these. He thought they were all generated from a dying brain, and when he had this himself and his brain was essentially not working, period, at all, he came out of that with a very different view. And I think he's had a hard time from colleagues. There's always going to be, the scientists and physicians have a hard time. You know, if you can't measure it and weigh it and do it, sometimes that's hard for them to understand. But I think we're going to find ways of looking at these things and being able to get a different perspective.
And I just know that
he's a legitimate guy who has a story to tell, and I think he's just trying to put his own NDE into integration into his life, because it takes a while regardless of who you are.
How strong is the resistance in the medical community? I can understand why there would be skepticism. Of course, there should be. But I would imagine you have to encounter some that's just way over the top. I know in reading about Eben's case that he was hammered.
Yeah. Well, I think it's mostly in the physician group. Nurses, I talk to a lot of nurses and have given lectures, and They see it, they recognize it, they simply don't always know what to do about it. The physicians, and, you know, come from a scientific background. I think they don't see it as often, and they don't deal with it as often, so they don't know what to do about it, and they're not terribly good at anything to do with dying. It's difficult for them because that's not part of their training, unless they're a hospice or physician. So I think, you know, it's difficult, and it'll change. And certainly people like Eben, and there's other doctors out there who have had experiences now and written books and talk about it. And it'll come one person at a time with the physicians. I don't think the resistance is terrible anymore. We get a lot of people, you know, asking questions, wanting to know more about it. That's part of my sadness, is more people don't know about IONS because we have the resources they need. And it's difficult. I got a call from a priest the other day who had had a near-death experience. And his question was, okay, now I had this experience. I saw what it was really all about. It's about love. It's about forgiveness. It's about doing things for people. That's what it's about. Now, how am I supposed to go back and teach all these things I've learned that now I'm not sure I believe in? And that's how real it is for people that, you know, have an extreme experience. They just know then what life is all about. And he had to question how he was going to continue to work within his religion because of what he had learned from his NDE.
Yeah, shakes things up. Well, you mentioned IONS, your organization. Tell me a little bit about it, what resources are available, whether or not you encourage people to get in touch, and then you have an event coming up.
We do. We have a conference coming up in July, the 28th of July in Orlando. And I have to say it's a four-day conference that for anyone who is a new near-death experiencer or really interested in it, I try to get them to this conference. My friend, Michael, who was from Vietnam, I got him there last year, and all he could do was keep walking around and saying, this is incredible, this is, and I tell them it's like coming home because there's a whole family there of people, professionals, experiencers, who aren't questioning their experience. They're just talking about after effects, how can we help, different things that are happening. So the International Association of Near-Death Studies puts on a conference every year. Last year it was in San Antonio, and I started trying to invite military and veterans to come, and actually gave them scholarships, and I'm doing the same thing this year. I want them to be able to come and find out about their experience and not be have to worry about the money of trying to pay the tuition. We are trying to fund a film, a video film that will be both for training and for, service members, and that information is all on our website, which is IANDS.org. And it's a fabulous conference for all kinds of people and healthcare professionals as well. And the clergy frequently come.
And can people just sample it? Can you come for a day, or you're in for the whole thing?
No, you can come for a day. On Thursday evening, there'll be a free talk. And then you can come for a day or the whole thing, and even a morning if you want to hear a specific speaker. And we have some great keynote speakers and many other speakers that talk about all kinds of aspects of near-death experiences. We have a healing center that goes on at the same time, and we have an experiencer lounge that is available and will be run for brand new experiencers who just want to talk to somebody and ask questions. So it's really total information. We run a bookstore that probably will have all the newest near-death experience books, so that's a great opportunity for people to get information. And everyone that I've recommended that go to this, who really just didn't know much about it, came away, one person came away in, with tears in their eyes and about an armful of books and said, I wish I had listened to you 10 years ago. I might have been able to deal with my father's death differently if I understood what an NDE was.
Diane Corcoran is my guest. We have links to the organization's webpage if you want more information about the organization or the upcoming event. When we come back, I want to talk to her about one of her colleagues, Nancy Evans Bush, who was my guest some months ago, wrote a book called Dancing Past the Dark about distressing near-death experiences. Some folks who say they went over to the other side saw stuff they really didn't like, it was almost hellish in the descriptions, and it really disturbed them quite a bit. We'll be back with more stories about the kinds of experiences that she's heard about, and then some questions about medical technology. As it gets better, are there more NDEs than ever before? Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM.